There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast. On the left.
Rise from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
You know what was a really fun side effect of the Jeff, the Talking Mongoose episodes was
What's that?
I mean, I talked about a little bit on the show, was like watching mongoose, like, battles.
Yeah.
Which is
Of course, fun. Yeah.
But I started thinking. I'm enraged. I'm enraged. But I started thinking about, like, how much more fun tiny animal fights are than big animal fights.
Sure.
Like, I like seeing, like, I was watching this video of a hippo rip apart a bunch of antelopes.
Yeah.
Right? That was cool.
Yeah.
But I kind of imagine, I feel like they get tuckered out.
They're well, I am such a fan of the hippo because I think they only kill when they're sad. Don't they seem sad?
They have to always be sad, though, because they kill more people in Africa than any other animal.
They are very depressed.
Well, I tell you what, you got to get the Depeche Mode out of the safari. That's the they have to stop being saddened by music. But think about how much more fun a hippo fight would be if they were the size of dogs and they could fight for hours.
That's right? Very true.
Normally, because them hippos, they, you know, like, it's like watching Kissel, like, struggle with the, like, if I got a big fucking Great Dane to fight Kissel,
sure,
that fight's only lasts a couple minutes until Kissel fucking smacks its head against the ground till its brains are a bunch of just, like, it's like a puddle in his hands.
Well, that could go either way.
It might. But think about if Kissel was the size of a toddler, but still with all his attributes, versus a chicken. That's a fun fight.
Well, now that I think about it, that is a fun fight. Hey, what's up, everyone? How you doing? Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left, Relaxed Fit. I am Ben with Marcus.
Hi.
And then we have the Ideas Man, Henry Zabrowski, a chicken-sized Kissel versus a normal-sized chicken. Whoa!
Man,
what do we
cool
have going on here? You're like Dusty Rhodes. You're booking the hell out of this match.
I just feel like, you know, because they say, oh, everybody's so sad because we can't go anywhere.
Sure.
But do you know that your imagination can take you anywhere?
That's right.
A book is like a magic carpet.
Yeah, kind of. That you can maybe tear a page out of, smoke a joint with. That would be very nice. Or if you're in solitary confinement, you can make friends out of your own poop. I don't know the rules.
Ben, I'm sure you've been catching up on your reading during this time.
Oh, I love looking at the covers of all my books. I actually did thumb through my Hunter S. Thompson book recently.
Which one?
It's very large.
You don't even remember the title.
He dies at the end.
Is it a book of his letters? His books of letters are really, really interesting. I love hearing his inner workings as a writer. Him and PKD have a very good, like, collection of their correspondence.
Have you ever heard an interview with Hunter S. Thompson's now widowed, widowed wife? It sounded like he got real boring.
Yeah.
Because all he did was take acid, but he did it alone. And then he constantly was like, I'm working on my memoirs. I'm working on my next big book. And then it was worse than The Shining because he didn't even write a sentence. He just stared out the window and licked his own guns.
He was felled by constant pain. He was in constant pain, and he could not, like, get his shit together towards the end. And he did self-medicate quite a bit.
That's one way of saying it, that's for
sure. Yeah, but he self-medicated. He went in there. Yeah, he did. It shows that, unfortunately, I knew a lot of kids like that in high school.
Yeah.
And when they started really getting into acid and mushrooms, and then they just did a life's worth in a semester.
Right.
And at first, they're super interesting. Right? At first, they sound like they really got shit together and stuff. Now one of them works at a gas station. And he can't, and I'm fine with the gas station worker if he was a philosophical gas station worker.
Sure.
But he is essentially a pump.
If you're a gas station worker, I think you're the front lines of your town. You're the hello
guy. You are technically like the town, not crier.
Ambassador.
You're the ambassador.
Yeah. You're the ambassador.
You're the gas ambassador.
The gas-ator. you look out for people. You're like you're like the front area where you can go and see people. Because a lot of times, especially when you do a lot of highway driving, there's that first gas station before you get into a town. Mm-hmm. That's the guy who's seeing who's the new strangers coming to town. And then he can ring the troubadour bell, and the guy comes and writes a quick song about the fucking... I know how little towns work. He comes and he writes his little song about the new guy that's in town. Then he goes and he tells the police, and they go and they fucking kill that guy.
Well, it depends on the person.
It'd be fantastic if every small town had its own Marty Robbins. Oh. Come in and sing its own Big Iron. Everyone's got a Big Iron.
Yeah, unfortunately, he got Me Too'd, so... that'll happen. Henry, you say that people get more creative in this quarantine, but I had a dream last night where we just all hung out at a bar. It was the most mundane evening that I could ever imagine, and I woke up and I was like, that was so freaking exciting. I ordered a draft beer, mm-hmm. and then we were all together. But it was like any other random Tuesday 2019. That's where my brain is now. I feel like I'm getting less creative.
I had a dream that I was in the Doom Patrol. It was fucking great.
Doom Patrol?
Yeah, I woke up in a fantastic mood.
Marcus has good, interesting dreams.
Yeah.
He was telling me last night about how, because we played games next to each other on the couch, mm-hmm. but almost silently. It's kind of nice via Zoom. And Marcus was telling me, but he talks about like the gray cities and the red cities of his mind that he travels to all the time deep within his dreamscapes.
Yeah.
See, this is why I think all three of us, well, maybe not you, Henry, but I think Marcus, you would do the best in a coma.
Yeah.
Because you gotta just go places in your head. I am trying to learn, because you never know when it's gonna happen. You can get comatose, you can get shivoed. She just fell in the shower. It can happen any time, and you have to be able to make the world in your own mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need to. I feel like Terry Schiavo, if she just had like a little megaphone put up near her lips, you might have heard her like, "Don't fall to fall." But the fact that we don't know, we don't have the technology yet.
Yeah.
We didn't then. It was early 2000s.
But now we could do. Now we hear corpses screaming all the time.
Absolutely.
I really want to say thank you to our scientists, our first responder scientists, to make sure we can hear the cries of the dead as much as possible. Thank you so much for your service.
I just read an article, as a matter of fact, in, what was it, American Scientific. And they were saying that they can almost tell the emotion of the person in a coma just by their brain waves. Sometimes they're happy, sometimes they're sad.
Mm.
They never like to have their feet tickled, though. And so they're supposed to wake up.
That makes me want to scream.
I know.
The idea of being trapped inside my own body. I was joking about this with Natalie last night. I was doing, because you ever do the thing with your loved one? I think we've talked about this before, where you like pretend to be dead.
Yeah.
Or
no,
something, just to get a rise out of them.
You have talked about this before, because you have some bizarre sexual fetish that you have. You guys do corpse play. There's a whole weird thing going on.
It's called drills. That's what we run is drills. But last night I was lying in bed. I was doing the Stephen Hawking where it was like my eyes were open. Just like, and she was like, Henry, stop it. Stop it. But then I was trying to blink and I was trying to say, this is a dry run for if I'm in a coma, it's fucking one blink for yes, two blinks for no, three blinks, show me your breasts.
Well, I don't know if you're ever going to get to three blinks when she tapes your eyeballs open. Why would she ever want to know what you're thinking?
Well, there's always just, you know, who knows what kind of thoughts in there. I wish I could dream. I wonder if it's my weed ingestion.
You can't dream.
Yeah, it's definitely your weed ingestion. The more weed you smoke, the less dreams you have. I know that was always, when I was smoking a lot of weed, I never dreamed. But, you know,
really?
Now that I don't smoke weed anymore, like, I got some fucking dreams. I could go into the fucking gray town and the red city and the tunnel of briars and all the places that I visit in my dreams.
I have some blood on my hands if you're just judging me by my dreams.
No, I know. You have said, you've dreamed horrible things.
Yeah.
The closest I've ever had, I had a dream recently that I was with a panel of scientists, and a panel of scientists were doing like a kiss study where they're making people that don't want to kiss and see what it does to their brain waves.
Was it just the dude who works at MSG, Madison Square Garden, who runs the kiss cam, and he gets off on watching what obvious friends kiss on camera?
I mean, you know, who knows what it takes to spark that little bit of
you never
tinda?
Know.
Sometimes you never know how much you're gonna love your best friend to your kiss, which is why I'm glad we've never kissed.
Not
because
yet.
I don't want. I don't. Ugh. I just don't want it to ever just find out that it just makes us hard as fuck.
You know what I just found out? If I was an undercover detective, mm-hmm. I'm sent to bust the biggest pedophile ring in the history of pedophile rings.
Gotcha.
I'm doing kiss cams. Uh-huh. Nothing but dudes and children.
Yeah,
they kiss. If he goes full Joe Biden, he's guilty. As charged. End the game.
The reaction of a stadium, right? Kiss cam, you know, like, you know, you got like, you know, normal couples, normal couples. Cuts
oh,
to
romance.
Old man, little boy, and he sees it. He points up. He's like, oh, look, leans over, fucking French kisses this little boy. Just the silence. The stadium just going dead right now. FBI dude up in the fucking telecom office going like, yes. Yes.
Yes, got one. Yes. Got one. Yes, I knew they were going to kiss. That is a hell of a way to bust these pedophiles. Also, a small documentary recommendation, After Truth, very good. Speaking of pedophiles, mm-hmm. they talk about the dude who broke into Comet Pizza, and that story is very sad because he really thought there was going to be a pedophile ring. He found nothing whatsoever, obviously, and he was a bit disillusioned. So be careful what you fall into out there, folks. Don't get in the YouTube holes.
Yeah. Remember, the YouTube algorithm is being given to you.
Yeah.
All right. Every single time you watch a video and you see all these requested videos, you're not researching.
No.
No.
That is YouTube's decades of research into figuring out how to manipulate your brain. It is right. And trying to give you technically what you want, which is they're just going to keep leading you down the hole. I watched a chunk of Plandemic. Plandemic is wrong. It is entirely wrong. It has been thoroughly debunked. But I can see if you've been watching for several hours and you've been up all night, you're like, this random woman has finally cracked the fucking case here. I've been with you.
Yeah.
You never know.
It's like we talked about on the Flat Earth series, you know, the guy that was, of course, you know, he was an Iraq war veteran. You know, mm-hmm. he'd seen the lies behind that whole war. He'd gotten into YouTube one day and just start watching one Flat Earth video and then another and then another and then another. And since he'd been lied to by his government so many times, he thought, what the fuck else are they lying to me about?
Sure.
And he fell fully into the Flat Earth conspiracy, and he is now a full-on Flat Earther.
Well, you tell me, why isn't Puffin rolling right now? It doesn't seem that round to me.
Do I trust the books, or do I trust my eyes?
Sometimes the eyes lie too, man.
The only flat earther that I will ever have respect for is the dude who made the rocket. Yes, he died.
Oh, yeah.
I understand he died. But
in an unrelated incident, though.
Unrelated. And it was, he did it. He made the rocket. I'm like, all right, bro, you go. You do you.
He put his money where his mouth is.
Yes, he did.
He kept saying, I don't believe in the curve. I want to see it for myself. He saw it once. Okay. He refused to believe that he did see it once. And he said, though, that he wants to go back up there again, that he has to double check. I mean, I get it. I've been there. How many times? Now that I've lost my belt from fucking gremlins, I fucking check for my belt 3 or 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. Waste of time.
Well, that is a perfect segue here. Speaking of myths, misconceptions, perhaps lies, Marcus has put together a hell of a story here. Now, we're talking more giants. Is that right?
We are. This is a continuation of our giant humanoid series, but this is the tale of one of those giant humanoids that ended up being a full-on hoax.
I refuse to believe it's a hoax. I've seen the pictures. I've seen the documents.
That's all you got to do. Now it's not a hoax anymore.
See, that's what's called. That's called the beginning of Plandemic.
Well, throughout the decades and centuries, entertainment mediums have gone through many different bizarre iterations. And back in the 1800s, one of the most popular forms of entertainment was the circus sideshow.
Yay!
Why isn't it still?
They have all these workers' rights.
It really was television and movies.
That was it.
Yeah.
It wasn't the concern for the fat man or the little person or the woman with the beard.
Absolutely not. It was actually mostly movies. Mostly killed like the sideshows and the circus and all that type of shit. There was just more money in the entertainment of movies.
Thanks, Charlie Chaplin.
Now all of that shit moved to friggin' TLC. TLC is now a circus sideshow where they just do the drama of the unfortunate. Everybody on that channel needs a reach out.
Yeah, I know it. I love looking at my 600-pound life. It is a beautiful, beautiful show in its own way.
Mm-hmm. It's really just the story of a bunch of feeder gainers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it kind of gives me hives when I watch it because I have dreams. I have one reoccurring nightmare I have had. So I wake up with a big orangutan face.
And like don't Martin you fucking Short joke. Pure luck. I love
God
it.
Damn it.
I love it. My face falling.
Well, just like cop dramas, superheroes, and fantasy stories go in and out of vogue in the TV and movie realm, the different acts in the sideshows of yore were also subject to the ebb and flow of popularity. Hmm. Back then, singing conjoined twins might have top billing one year, while the biggest acts the next season would be people with no arms playing musical instruments with their feet. And then those acts would lose the top spot to the sideshow geek.
See, sideshow geeks are a lot of fun, but honestly, why can't they all just be together in one big old band? I'd love to see a geek being backed up by a guy playing fucking drums with his feet. That's a great afternoon. That's a wonderful Friday night.
All right, well, what's a sideshow geek? It's not just Screech from Saved by the Bell. It's not just someone who likes to read all the square movies that are words, a.k.a. books.
Well, geeks were among the most bizarre of sideshow acts and usually involved either a vagrant man or woman wandering a dark pit dressed in rags, waiting for the barker to throw down live chickens or snakes, which the geek would hungrily devour raw and alive in the most vicious and cruel ways possible.
And if you want to read about the spiritual evolution of a geek, read the book Nightmare Alley, which is the book that Anton LaVey essentially stole his entire life story from. And it's also going to be a new Guillermo del Toro movie, which I would say I want to see. It's going to be very, very intelligent. Yeah. But Nightmare Alley is a very, very important book to esoteria.
Well, interesting.
Well, usually the circus sideshows would just kind of sweep the back alleys of major cities looking for vagrants, mostly drunks, dudes who would essentially debase themselves in exchange for a quart of booze.
All right, much like the great docuseries Bum Fights.
Yeah, it's yes, actually a lot docu-series. Like Bum Fights, except this was just a guy in a pit biting the heads off of chickens.
See, now I miss Coney Island. I like to play that game, Shoot the Freak, although I found that the gun, it ain't aimed right. The gun ain't aimed right, so you can't ever shoot the damn guy.
Are those poor 17-year-olds who were made to be the freaks and Shoot the Freak? I mean, how many times you'd go in there, like, they'd have, like, a cup on.
Yeah.
Because, you know, naturally, we're all shooting for the dick.
Of course.
Just so you don't know, Shoot the Freak used to be an old sideshow thing that used to be on Coney Island, if you don't know, where a 16 or 17-year-old in body armor used to run with a shield from, like, coverage point to coverage point while you got a paintball gun and you could just shoot at him. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah. It was 2015 fucking, I played it.
Yeah, and he'd yell shit at you. He'd yell insults. The technical name for that sideshow act is the bozo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the guy that would, because that is kind of a continuation of like the dunking booth type thing where you'd have the clown sitting on the dunking booth and he'd roast whoever came by and then you'd try to dunk him into the booth. It's known as a bozo.
Bozo the clown? Not
but if you
a
noticed,
pedophile.
Not a pedophile. Very but good. If you noticed that fucking crotch armor was just plastered with paintball guns.
But for a brief period in the late 1800s, the hottest commodity in the sideshow game wasn't a human act at all. Rather, the public's attention was drawn towards the cold stillness of the giant petrified man. And no petrified man drew bigger crowds than the Cardiff Giant.
Cool.
Building off our Giant Humanoids episode, the Cardiff Giant was an admitted hoax from the late 19th century involving a 10-foot-tall man made out of stone that was billed as the ancient petrified remains of an antediluvian giant.
I tell you what, they didn't skimp on the dick on that thing.
Definitely
I actually
not.
Was really, I wonder if the guy who put it all together was like, and it's modeled after me. And you're like, I don't know.
Just wondering why his wife keeps on slowly backing up into it over and over and over again as she screams in orgasm.
Well, hailing from Cardiff, New York, the eponymous giant was the creation of a tobacconist and militant atheist named George Hull. And Hull initially cooked up this entire scheme with no other motivation than pure spite.
It's so powerful. The power of spite in the world of hoaxes is absolutely fascinating. Yeah. I did a little bit of research that I'm going to save for an episode about the so-called surgeon's photograph from the Loch Ness Monster, the famous photo of the Loch Ness Monster popping its head out of the lake, right? That was created by a man named Marmaduke Wetherell. So we're going to get into this whole story. Best name in the world.
Yes.
Best name I've ever heard. But there's a whole story about how he did that just specifically to give the Daily Mail a fucking finger.
Yeah.
And of course, if you're watching the docuseries The Last Dance on the Chicago Bulls, yes, they still beat the New York Knicks, and I'm still very upset about it. But yeah. Spite is a great motivator.
Spite is the whole reason why I'm sitting in this seat right now. Spite is my biggest motivator. Always has been.
You always very need powerful. A Jerry Krause to hate. You always need one. And if it's not, if you don't have a Jerry Krause, make one up. You can just do that and get angry, and then you can win.
Well, here's this story of Spite.
Okay.
George Hull had been visiting his brother in Iowa and had found himself in an argument with a Methodist revivalist who had been quoting the verse from the book of Genesis that claimed that giants once roamed the earth.
You got to put butts in seats.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. You got to give them a hook.
Absolutely.
Well, Hull naturally thought this claim was ridiculous. So ridiculous, in fact, that he stewed on his argument with the Methodist reverend for days, finding himself entirely unable to let it go.
I love it.
You think there's somebody bigger than me? No. You tell me there's somebody bigger than me? There's nothing bigger than tobacco.
Chewing on his own hat.
Thank God I got this hat made out of tobacco leaves.
Oh.
I honestly find that it's very interesting that he learned early on in developing the cigarette industry that there is no God?
Absolutely not.
Eventually, Hull decided that the only way out of his frustrating predicament was to publicly humiliate all those who believed in literal interpretations of the Bible. So he vowed to create his own human giant and pass it off as a genuine fossil dug out of the earth.
I love it.
So, but then what began was an incredible art project.
Yeah, of course.
In order to achieve this goal, Hull devoted an unreasonable amount of time, energy, and patience to building this man-made monument to Spite. Overall, Hull would spend 3 years of his life just preparing the hoax.
Everyone always wonders, what's in the mind of an artist? And it is just this sentence. Yeah, this will show him. This will show him. Yeah, this will show him.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you tell her, fucking giants. I give them fucking giants. I'll give them a fucking giant. Look how nice this fucking giant's legs are. Look how detailed this giant's fucking hands are. This is beautiful.
Gorgeous.
See, Hull needed the giant to be quote-unquote discovered in New York State, where he lived. But he knew that using local craftsmen to construct the giant would most likely result in the secret disseminating itself before Hull even got the hoax in the ground.
Mm.
Yeah, man, fucking H.H. Holmes it.
Yep.
Also, fucking Wallfacers it. You can't let anybody know. You have to be the only person to hold the entire plan in your mind, which is what I'm preparing for.
Absolutely.
I call my end plans.
Yeah, what's the number three step in your end plan?
Get people to trust mailboxes again.
Well, Hull went back to Iowa, where the initial argument had taken place, because he went from Iowa back to New York State. This is like 1868.
Oh, my God.
So he's taking a train all the way back to New York State, thinking about this shit, stewing on this shit. And then finally,
I can't make a fucking giant? I can't fucking make a fucking giant? I'll make a giant with a shirt on. I'll make a giant with a fucking hat on.
And so he traveled all the way back to Iowa, where the initial argument had taken place. We're talking days of travel here.
Oh, my God.
And hired a team of men to quarry out an 11-foot-long block of gypsum, telling the workers that the stone was for a new Abraham Lincoln monument going up in New York State.
Oh.
Yeah, need enough fucking room for a stupid fucking pipe hat. Big old stovepipe hat, all right? Yes, quit asking questions or I'm going to smack your neck, all right? Give me that gypsum.
I was just looking at his death mask recently, Abraham Lincoln's.
It's cool, right?
Very thin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you preparing for yours?
No, they don't do death masks anymore, I don't think.
Oh, come on. Go on Etsy.
Yeah.
Well, Hall then had the stone shipped by train to Chicago, where a German stonecutter, sworn to secrecy, was commissioned to sculpt Hall's giant.
Cool.
After carving it, the craftsman then artificially aged it with acid and even used a special tool to give the giant the appearance of having pores.
That's so fucking...
Just look how fucking detailed it is. Yeah, look at the little fucking sleepy smile on his face. I love this fucking giant. I love his attitude. I love what he's doing.
Cool-ass giant.
After it was done, Hall then shipped the finished project by rail to Binghamton.
Binghamton?
Upstate New York. So think of... To track it again, he went from New York to Iowa. Back to New York. He went to Chicago. Chicago now to Binghamton. So he has crisscrossed the country three times.
It's all because of a revivalist preacher.
An argument that probably lasted 30 minutes.
Wow.
He then lugged the 3,000-pound statue upstate to Cardiff and buried it on a farm owned by his cousin, Stubb Newell, who is in on the whole scheme.
Oh, Stubb, he always is in on the scheme, but he never has any idea what's happening.
And I tell you what, I'm so glad to bury another tall man. They wouldn't let me on the first ever basketball team. Aww. And I said, yeah, you might all be some tall whites, but how about me? I'm shaped like a ball.
Oh, Stubb, you're doing good, bud.
Hall then waited an entire year to let the statue settle into the ground because it had to look real.
So this is what now? We're at 5 years in this master plan?
We're at about, it took him about 2 years to get the whole thing made and get the gypsum out, get the fucking thing sculpted, get it shipped back to Binghamton, and then he buried it and waited another year.
I love this guy.
It's the power of patience. I think that we don't have it as much. I think that people, when they talk about their amazement about the giant ancient like sculptures and structures that we find, like Göbekli Tepe, like I was listening to a Coast to Coast on architectural hoaxes, stuff about like the lost tribes of Israel, about how somebody had just buried a fucking tablet with Hebrew on it in New Mexico and say, like, this shows that New Mexico actually belongs to the Jews. I mean, they can have it if they want it, but
absolutely,
they gotta show up because it turns out that's a hoax. I don't know. I'm not quite certain, but you have to have patience. I don't think we have the patience anymore to do architectural hoaxes anymore, or even giant architectural things. It takes thousands of years and artists to build something like the pyramids.
Well, when the giant was deemed ripe for discovery, Hull's cousin Stubb instructed two unwitting workers to dig a well right on the spot where the giant was buried. Sure enough, 3 feet down, the men discovered something in the shape of a foot.
Cool.
And once a little more dirt was cleared away, one of the workers exclaimed,
"I declare, some old Indian has been buried here."
Whoa!
And upon further inspection, these men uncovered the 10-foot-tall statue. And of course, Stubb Newell made sure to nudge the men in the direction that this was not a statue at all, but could, quite possibly, be the remains of an ancient lost race.
Yeah, take a look at the fucking pores. Take a look at the fucking arms, right? See how detailed this shit is, right? Look at this fucking look at this fucking giant, huh? This is wild, huh? Yeah, I got one, huh? Yeah, right, there's the proof right there.
Stubb is also doing a great job being the narrator for Ancient Aliens. Or could it be? Very fun. If you are these guys, yes, you're sent out to dig a well. What's more boring than that? I mean, other than you love to dig your holes.
It'd be fun to kind look of at the architecture of digging it and how to keep it from collapsing and all that.
See, but look
those
at this.
Guys, that's a gift for those guys. How excited would we all be, even if it's fake?
Yeah.
You get to believe that it's real for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
They think that they just found the biggest archaeological thing since the Ark.
Yeah.
No, I always feel bad for those. I always feel bad for the recently fooled because I get it. I want it all to be real, too. I want the giants to be real. You're just like a little toddler compared to the real fucking giants, Kissel. I want a real one. I want one protecting my home. I want one going to the grocery store for me, and I want one destroying my enemies for me. And it makes me mad that I can't get one. So I understand where these people are coming from, that kind of heartbreak.
Mm-hmm. See, if you would have just said that in your audition for Dr. Robotnik, you would have beat out Jim Carrey, who was too thin to play the role.
Way too thin. Well, considering how giant bones were being discovered all over the country during this time, remember we talked all about it in our giant humanoids episode,
mm-hmm,
and since the general public didn't really understand science all that well, it wasn't much of a stretch to think that a giant could have quite possibly found itself petrified whole.
You know, I mean, if they're already, if giants are already real, then what's the extra step of believing, and they also turn into perfectly stone replicas of their own bodies when they die?
Yeah. Sure.
Well, you had petrified wood. Everyone knew that petrified wood existed by this time. So it's like, it's one of those things where you can make the logical just like, well, if an organic material such as wood can be turned to stone, then possibly organic material such as flesh could possibly also be turned into stone.
Sounds reasonable to me, and I'm just a and guy in a random ass bar.
I absolutely love this discussion, and Brenda, will you bend over forth to show us your nethers once more? Ah, what a wonderful day.
Yeah, you want to see my petrified butthole?
Brenda, you have changed since the war.
Yeah, I lost my butthole in the war. Got shot off by a sniper about 400 miles away, about 400 yards away.
Now, by the time the workers suitably spread the word amongst the locals, Stub Newell had already set up a tent and was soon charging 50 cents per person to view the so-called ancient humanoid.
Damn, pricey ticket.
1869, that's a pretty pricey ticket. Well, he started off charging 25 cents, but so many people came on the first 2 days that he doubled the price.
Damn.
Now, the scientific community immediately recognized it as a statue, and not a very good one at that.
Oh.
Who's listening to these so-called scientists?
But George Hull didn't care about fooling the scientific community. He could give less of a fuck. His only goal was fooling the clergy. And in this goal, George Hull was absolutely successful. The pastor of the largest church in Syracuse visited the Cardiff Giant and fell for the scam completely and wondered aloud if perhaps this was one of the giants mentioned in Scripture.
Hmm.
And you could see that moment, right? Where he's sitting there and he's just like, this is one of the giants. Yes, finally proof. And there's Hall like, yeah, is it? Is it? Like so ready. He's like, when is he going to finally be in like, fooled you, like from Spaceballs.
So it's just a long, it's just a long episode of Punk'd with Ashton Kutcher.
I'm gonna fucking gotcha, you fucking bitch.
But by this point, Hull's spite had been overtaken by the vast amount of coin earned from the attraction.
Hey, all right.
So instead of revealing it all as a hoax, he just sort of let it ride for as long as he could.
It's not up to him to make people he can't decide what people are going to think.
Yeah.
He just buried a statue, called it a giant.
But it also shows how, like, something just because, just out of spite, his side hustle, a whole other side of thing, it turned into his main gig.
Yeah.
Just by fucking, you know, he built the special. He didn't understand at the time, I just joined the tourism industry.
He did.
Up until then, he was trying to do some big art thing, but that's what happens. Sometimes you just make money on accident.
You put it right by the world's largest ball of yarn. You put it right by the huge cheese wheel. Yep. I mean, people love big things. There's that big needle and thread over there in downtown Manhattan that people like to take pictures by.
Or in the fashion district.
Sure.
But this is also one of those precarious things where, like, well, is George Hull a sellout? Is he a shill for Big Giant?
Maybe. Maybe.
I mean, that, you know, there will be some people who think that. That sure. Because George Hull strayed from his original path of pwning the clergy, because he decided to make money instead, yes, there will be some in the atheist community that will call him a sellout. But I say fucking go for it, George.
Yeah.
This is like fucking Green Day made that musical.
Aw. It's not about selling out. It's about buying in, okay?
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of Shark Tank.
Now, Stub Newell was not as good at keeping a secret as George Hull was.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yep. And it wasn't long before Stub started letting the story slip to friends and neighbors. He was just too good of a secret.
But the thing is, the joy is in the secret.
Yeah.
This is what Stubb didn't realize, how much leverage he just gave away with that information.
That's why sometimes, as a business owner, like nowadays we have fucking NDAs, but at the time they used to fucking get the grease shoots going. Remember H.H. Holmes? Sometimes you gotta X out some of these loose ends if you want to have a good old fashioned petrified giant fucking industry cornered. If you want that shit, you gotta lock up.
So you're saying he should have shot Stub the way that the cousin of what was the tall guy from Of Mice and Men?
Lenny
was shot. Those bastards.
He deserved it.
He did not deserve it. No, he was given free massages. He did not kill that woman.
He killed that poor girl.
He did not kill that woman. The massage killed that woman. It happened to be attached to his hands.
Interesting. You could have been a defense attorney if you could learn. You would be an incredible defense attorney.
I took law classes in college. Not guilty, I would say.
I'm not saying he should have killed Stubbs, but he definitely could have killed
Stubbs. Push him over. He can't get up.
Oh, my belly's bigger than my feet.
Oh, man, I'm going to starve here.
Oh, no.
Before the cat was completely out of the bag, Hull cashed out and sold the giant to a syndicate of businessmen. This was back when, like, buying a sideshow attraction was a legitimate investment.
Cool.
I honestly wish if you got an act, send it to sidestoriesLPOTL@gmail.com. We'll try to figure out, like, how do we bring it on the road with us?
The closest thing that we had in our lifetime, because of Star, we will never see Charles Manson stuffed and paraded around the streets as he should have been. She broke his heart. She broke his heart for the last time.
And all she had to do was touch it once.
Yeah.
Whatever.
If she just reach under the table and give a little touch to the end of the tip, Charles Manson would be like, all right, just take my body. Like, he could have just. That would have been incredible.
It would have been great.
And if you had any doubt that sideshows were legitimate sources of revenue back in the late 19th century, Hull was able to negotiate $23,000 from the business syndicate.
Damn.
Which, in today's money, is $500,000.
Dude, this guy faked it till he made it.
Made it big.
Damn.
Is there any saying how much he invested?
I don't know how much he invested, but I would imagine maybe $2,000 or $3,000.
It would have to
there.
Be some. It must be a pricey ticket at that point.
Well, I mean, how much is gypsum? He had to buy the big block of gypsum.
And
he had
travel.
Yeah.
And the man hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he definitely sunk a lot of money into this, into a thing that was not going to make a profit at all.
And I mean, he had to hire the guys who had to dig the well, but they were just paid in soup because that was also how you would pay people in the 1800s.
Well, the syndicate brought the Cardiff Giant up out of its hole and started touring it around towns, big and small, around upstate New York.
Cool.
But as the Cardiff Giant started making waves closer to New York City, the greatest American flim-flam man until L. Ron Hubbard caught wind of this new type of attraction. And before the syndicate knew it, P.T. Barnum was getting into the Petrified Giant game.
Whoa.
Got to, man. You can't be the only ones out of the fucking game. Gotta get your skin in there, bro.
Mm-hmm. So P.T. Barnum is the Amazon in this situation? Is he going to be crushing this small guy?
P.T. Barnum, when it comes to sideshow attractions and just when it comes to entertainment in general, like, P.T. Barnum was the top guy in New York City and pretty much the top guy in the East Coast. Like, P.T. Barnum had the fucking market cornered. He knew exactly what the fuck he was doing at all times when it came to sideshow attractions. He was the man that was such a visionary that he took a monkey and a fish.
Whoa.
He cut the top off of the fish, the bottom off of the monkey, sewed the monkey onto the fish, and displayed it as Fiji the mermaid.
Take my money, because I am seeing that right now.
Do you remember we saw one? We saw one of the faked mermaids. I believe that was in the British Museum.
Yeah.
And we went, that was cool as hell. But they look fun. I would pay money to go see them. Even now, I would pay money to go see them.
I went to the one in Coney Island. I love it. I love the smell. Mm-hmm. I love the. It's just disgusting.
Now, at first, Barnum just tried buying the giant outright, offering the syndicate the modern equivalent of $1 million for the right to exclusively exhibit the attraction in his so-called American Museum, located in what is now the Financial District of Manhattan.
Okay.
It's like, you know that park where City Hall is?
Yes, sir.
Right at the bottom of that park. That's where Barnum's American Museum was.
Well, isn't that Battery Park?
No, it's not. It's a little bit west of Battery, or it's a little bit east of Battery Park.
Let's get into more locations of Manhattan, shall we?
I miss it. I miss going to Manhattan.
You get down there on the R train, right? You could take the L over to Union Square. You take the R down, right? You could do one of those. You could take a Q down, I guess.
No, you're going to want to do the 4-5. That's your express. Don't get stuck on the 6. That's your local.
But no, best way to do it, take the L to 14th Street. Take the 5 down to Brooklyn Bridge, and you get a nice walk.
walk right past City Hall. It's a nice real view.
So you think she's going to come back to me? Or do you think, like, I don't know. Anyway.
Nah, dude, she's dead, dude.
Oh, all right.
Well, the American Museum was a fucking wonderful place. It's one of those places where if I could time travel and go to like one location, the American Museum would be on the list. It was like just a complex of entertainment for the time.
Awesome.
But when the syndicate declined the offer from Barnum, the $1 million offer, that meant that they thought, we're going to be able to tour this fucking thing across the country and make well over $1 million. Like, I mean, it would be like, I think it was the equivalent of $50,000. But like, yeah, we're going to make $50,000 50 cents at a time.
I just sell the damn thing.
But when they didn't sell it, Barnum out-flim-flammed the flim-flammers by sending an undercover agent to the Cardiff Giant exhibition to model the giant's exact shape and appearance using a lump of wax.
Oh, my God.
Barnum.
We'll make it. You know what? I was going to sell you all this. We're going to sell you a bunch of money. We're going to do this in a fun way. Name's P.T. Barnum. We're going to do all this. But instead, we're just going to make one. Tell you, go fuck yourself.
He outflanked the flim-flam men.
Barnum then copied the exact measurements of the giant, which were clearly stated in the attraction's newspaper ads. They said exactly how wide it was, exactly how tall it was.
Oh my God, it's like putting the fucking KFC secret ingredient in the fucking newspaper.
Turns out it's chicken.
And Barnum made an exact replica out of plaster, which was much cheaper and more quickly made than stone. But he was able to make it look exactly the same. And even though it was not as quite as impressive as the original, before the syndicate knew it, Barnum had put his version on display at the American Museum and billed it as the real Cardiff Giant, drawing even bigger crowds than the genuine article.
Man, that fast, dude.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. They should have just taken the offer.
And of course, the syndicate sued. But once the whole kerfuffle made its way to the court, the Cardiff Giant's originator, George Hull, was brought to the stand to testify on the giant's provenance.
If you're a flim-flam man,
shit.
If you are a flim-flam man, the last thing you want to do is be under oath. That is like not going to be good for you.
But I almost want to say a flim-flam man is never under oath. It's like they are kind of like submerged in oath, and they will just sort of rise to the surface above oath as much as they can. They're looking for air.
Yeah, at I can every see second. That. Sure.
But can you imagine George Hull, right? The ultimate stick up his ass fucking nerd. He spent 3 years building this giant just to tell a priest to go fuck himself. So now he gets to go into a court like big fucking feather in his hat, you know what I mean? Being like, ha, 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 friends upon friends upon friends. It's time to really get into the story of the Cardiff Giant. He's so excited, right? Yeah. It's his time to shine.
Yeah. He's the star.
And he'd already gotten paid. You know, he'd got his $23,000 for the fucking Cardiff Giant. He'd gotten paid. He didn't give a fuck.
Nope.
So he laid out the entire thing in court. And eventually they ruled for Barnum. You know, like, well, it's a fucking, it's a hoax. If it's a hoax, if it's just an invention and you didn't trademark it, you didn't copyright it or anything like that, then yeah, he can do it.
Ah, PT, but that's a bastard move by Mr. Barnum.
Well, it's sort of like, you know, what will eventually happen when, like, Kristen Bell makes a true crime podcast and says, like, the only true crime podcast, the oldest and longest running true crime podcast. And they're like, oh, man, Kristen Bell, leave our industry alone.
Wow, I didn't know Kristen Bell had a podcast. I definitely listened to that. She's very
no,
pretty.
No, don't.
Yeah,
no,
I'm sorry, guys. I gotta.
No.
What's that? Kissel, oh, she needs a co-host. Isn't that exciting? I'm going to audition.
No, Kissel, stop. No.
But George Hull had learned an important lesson in flim-flammery. Instead of returning to the tobacco business, Hull traveled out west to find a whole new group of rubes who hadn't heard about the whole Cardiff Giant hoax.
This is when you could just move and you could leave all your problems. You could actually do that at some point in this world.
I mean, we could do it now, but
where
are the only places we can go to? I mean,
Jakarta.
Jakarta, Haiti, you know?
Maybe Haiti.
We could go to Madagascar. You could go to, like, I mean, there's not a lot of people asking a heck of a lot of questions in Iran right now if you can get over there. Like, you can just kind of get over there and be like, hey, guys, I'm here.
Yeah.
Name's
true.
Ronald McDonald.
Wow.
Well, out in Colorado, Hull worked with a former employee of P.T. Barnum to create another giant that he called the Solid Muldoon.
Do not ever go to the doctor and say that you have that. They will make you take a dump in front of them.
I'm always looking for a solid Muldoon, but I was just stuck with a real runny Muldoon this morning that I was pretty upset about.
Named after a famous strongman named Bill Muldoon, the Solid Muldoon was made of rock dust, clay, plaster, ground bones, blood, and meat that had all been mixed together, sculpted, and fired in a kiln.
By horror movie logic, this would come to life.
Yes.
That's cool. Like making a fucking golem.
That's awesome.
It's the golem, right? All you need, I think it's like blood and cum and a rabbi, and now you have a rock slave.
That's pretty awesome.
Then, probably going off the advice of the former Barnum employee, Hull added a small bit of flair and gave the Solid Muldoon a tail.
Oh, okay. That's an interesting... You don't really think of giants with tails too often, but all right.
Well, apparently Hull was like a big reader of Charles Darwin, so he was getting into the whole evolution thing at the time, so he was thinking like, perhaps, like using some scientific flammery, like perhaps the men in the olden times had evolved from a different beast which had a tail and was of giant stature and size.
And with any luck, they could just pretend as if it's tucked its penis between its legs and it's making itself a vagina in the front and giving itself a dick tail.
I'm a pretty lady.
You are a pretty lady. Oh my God, come here, you giant Muldoon.
My wife has asked me to stop building giants because I keep falling desperately in love with them.
That's creative thinking, though.
Yeah, it really is.
Would that be cheating? Do you think it would be cheating? A bit of a side note, but if someone fell in love with like their real sex doll, do you think that might break up a marriage, I guess? Could you fall in love with a statue?
This is becoming a thing. We should look into that, because there's obviously people have relationships with objects. I mean, we covered about the guy that was posting with his real doll wife.
That's right.
And he was on Side Stories. We covered the story, but he was with his real doll wife and he staged a pregnancy where he did all these Facebook pictures of a baby coming out of her pussy and all this kind of stuff. And then she disappeared. And then Facebook flipped out about the disappearance of his real doll wife and created a "Where is Stephanie?" like looking for her, like true crime style, you know, let's dig up the location of this woman, like Shelley Miskovich.
Not to be too producer of Maury Povich here, but if you are or you know someone who has left their husband or wife because of a real doll or statue, sidestories.lpotl@gmail.com. Let us know.
We've had this conversation in our household. I am not allowed to have sex with a robot or a real doll of any kind.
What about the fleshlight?
The fleshlight's fine.
Well, this is the thing. In my mind, is it better to have something that has no body, right? Because that's where Marcus is angling towards.
Right.
But it has no breasts and no butt and no legs, right? So you're not having sex with a full-on fake woman. But if you just have a machine that sucks your dick, that's not cheating.
It sounds like that's off the table for the Parks household.
Yeah, because it's a sex robot. If the machine does, as long as I'm doing most of the work here, and as long as it doesn't have a face, totally on board.
Well, what is Carolina? Is she Amish or something?
Well, the whole thing about the Solid Muldoon all came crashing down after a disgruntled insider blew the whistle on Hull.
Oh.
And Hull got out of the petrified giant business forever. Perhaps not so surprisingly, the success of the Cardiff Giant and of the Solid Muldoon inspired nearly a dozen more petrified giant discoveries.
They're everywhere. I'm going to say the word hookers in the trunk of the movie Dirty Work. Where all these dead hookers in one of these trucks.
There's hookers in every one of these trucks.
Whoa, look at all these giants. Who would have known?
I love Dirty Work.
That movie is so funny.
Classic. And this is even after Hull publicly admitted that both of them were hoaxes. But a year after the Solid Muldoon, a hotel owner at Lake Cuyahoga, back in New York, was able to pull the same scam until one of the guys who helped bury it let the secret slip while he was drunk at the bar one night.
God.
Gotta have your guys keep quiet, man.
They have to keep quiet. I just don't understand how they don't realize the money is in the secret. You blow the secret, you just cost yourself your entire living.
I wonder if there's just a way to, like, I mean, you can't trust anybody. You don't know what anybody's going to do. But, I mean, you know, it's like you got to get information on them.
There is a way, Henry. Three men can share a secret if two of them are dead.
Yeah! Well, that's just one. That's just one man. And then that one guy gets hammered at the bar and tells everyone.
Well, you just never tell anybody the secret. I really do believe that. I think that if you're the head of the scam, you hold the burden of being the only one with the full line of knowledge. And you keep everybody in your life at arm's length until the scam is over. You don't let any fucking person know. You have to have the strength to keep a lockdown on your own mind and hire each person separately. I've been thinking about this for a long time.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's just not in human nature. They want the reaction.
They do.
People need to feel as if they've pulled something over on someone. And you're only going to know that if you tell a few people.
Yeah.
Occult teachings show us how people are always thirsty for that which is behind the veil. The idea that there is, and like the esoteric schools, they talk about how there is one layer of learning, which is taking information you get as face value. But then there's always deeper and deeper levels where you look at it and be like, what is it? How is it symbolically? How is it culturally? What does it mean to me astrologically?
And if you want any greater example than that, put a bra on your male friend and you tell me you don't want to see his titties. Guarantee you that you will. Guarantee
if you put my tits,
I will look at them. I would want to see them.
Yeah.
Oh, weird, right?
Yeah, it's weird.
No, I agree. Amazingly, the scam then had another resurgence back in Colorado. It's just Colorado and New York State trading off.
I love it.
It's like a fucking COVID.
Yep.
In Colorado, a con man named Soapy Smith commissioned and buried a concrete giant that he nicknamed McGinty in a town called Creed.
Yeah, we'll never see a giant like my McGinty. McGinty's only 4 feet tall.
That's a pretty small giant.
They call me Soapy, which is funny. They call me Soapy, which is funny because I'm covered with dirt.
Soapy, I mean, he was the guy in Creed when it came to cons. He had a whole army.
Yeah, you need a giant? You need a giant? You want an eagle? I'll get you an eagle 2 seconds. I could just, you know what I do is I just tape wings to a rat. That's your eagle right there.
Well, he pretty much had a stranglehold over all the vice in town. Like, he controlled all the pickpockets, he controlled all the card games, all the numbers, and then figured, I'm going to get into the giant game here.
Wow, he's like Shredder.
But by the time the scientific community showed up to verify Soapy's claim, both he and McGinty had skipped town. And Soapy
literally skipped out of town.
I guess I just slipped through their fingers again. Old Soapy can't get a grip.
It must have been weird traveling with all those banjo players.
And Soapy unfortunately met his end 6 years later when he was gunned down in the streets of Skagway, Alaska.
What? What did he do in Skagway, Alaska to get gunned down? Something he definitely deserved to get gunned down for.
I tell you what, I thought I was safe when I moved out of Whoresville, but I guess I found my death in Skagway.
Sounds like it's out of Borderlands.
But Soapy was among the last to make a solid dollar from the Petrified Giant game.
Oh.
Where East Barnum had supposedly offered $20,000 for the solid Muldoon. Petrified men were going for no more than $1,000 by the 1890s. Still a fucking good sum of money, but a large drop from $20,000 just from just a few years earlier. Market this fell out.
Saturated the market. Too many giants.
Mm-hmm. As far as the fate of the Cardiff Giant went, it ended up in a barn in Fitchburg, Massachusetts, and did make an appearance at a state fair in Buffalo in 1901.
Okay.
But gained little attention compared to the crowds the Petrified Giant had once drawn.
Oh, but you know, I'm sure there was still amazement in the eyes of children.
Yeah.
Which is true. Because if I was a kid, I would look at it, I'd be like, damn, that's a... Even if it is just rock, and I know it would be rock, I'd be like, it's a lot of rock.
It's 10 feet tall.
It's a 10 feet, that's a lot of rock.
I'm interested in seeing it now. Yeah. I want to see it more because of the story.
Absolutely.
Dude, next time you come to New York, you can see it.
Okay. Ooh. Where is it?
Well, a newspaper publisher in Des Moines owned the giant throughout most of the first half of the 20th century. but it eventually made its way back to New York State when it was bought in 1947 by the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, where you can still go see it in the main barn to this day.
Dude, I didn't know that there was a Farmers Museum. I am going.
Yeah, dude.
That's cool.
They got cows and shit.
That's a fun idea, man. That is a really, really fun idea. I feel like we should go up there, man. When next time I'm in town, we should go up to Coopersville. Isn't that also where the baseball shit is?
Yeah. That's where the Hall of Fame
is. That's Cooperstown.
No, Cooperstown?
It's Cooperstown, right?
Where's the baseball Hall of Fame?
Cooperstown. They're both in Cooperstown. You got the baseball Hall of Fame.
Where's the one in Columbus? What, Cleveland has the
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The Basketball Hall of Fame is in Massachusetts. It's upstate. Yeah.
All right.
I think it's
okay. You want to take the 4 train? That's going to take you right down to Bowling Green.
You're going to want to take the 185 up, and you're going to want to go up to take the metro up to Westchester.
Yep.
In case you're wondering, the Sugaring Off Sunday's pancake breakfast, usually held at the Farmers Museum, canceled until further notice, but they promised to return.
They better return.
Better. I want that pancake breakfast.
Yes. Oh, because you know they have sausages, too. Ugh. It's not just pancakes. They get you in the door with the pancakes, but they get you out the door when you got the sausage shits.
We've already talked about my obsession with pancakes, and I got to start making some good old-fashioned big fluffy pancakes in my
home.
Flapjacks,
baby.
We've been eating a lot of protein pancakes because those are the ones Natalie eats because she's trying to stay trim.
Henry, were you the one that got pissed off when you found out when you finally figured out why they're called pancakes?
No.
Was that you, Ben?
Well, no. I would assume they're called pancakes because they're cooked on a pan.
Yes.
And they're kind of cakey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't figure that out.
That's exactly what I expected. When I hear the name pancake, when I get a pancake, that's what I expect. Yeah.
Now, you tell me waffle. You give me the waffle word. I couldn't tell you why the fuck they call that goddamn thing a waffle. I'd call it a fucking bunch of goddamn carb holes.
I love my carb holes. But, the first thing is being like, oh, you're going to give me waffle. What, are you going to give me some kind of Democrat?
you got a good... Man, I love that. That's a good flip-flop joke. Flim-flam.
Swift boating.
Ah.
It's 2004. That is a 16-year-old reference. And we are speaking to an audience right now, some of which are under the age of 48.
John Kerry, the only man I've ever believed in. I said, he's the only one. If only he could save us right now.
Oh,
that long-faced fucking... Oh, God, what an ugly piece of shit.
Did that horseman get me excited in 2004?
I feel the same excitement now.
Wow, I really do. What an excitement. I am trembling to go to the polls.
Trembling. And that's the story of the Cardiff Giant. And
awesome, the Cardiff Giant.
And all the giant hoaxes that came afterward.
So what did we learn? Number one, you can never trust P.T. Barnum. He's going to undercut you. If he gives you $1 million, take the goddamn money.
Never trust P.T. Barnum. Just take the money. Just take the money. P.T. Barnum's trying to get in your business and let him have your business. We now know this, but it's too late now.
If a person that you're speaking with that you want to keep a secret even looks at alcohol, that person cannot keep a secret.
No.
Definitely not.
Anybody named after a person who's gotten an amputee shit done to you.
Yep.
You can't be called Stubbs.
No.
No.
And be trusted with a fucking secret.
I think the most important lesson here is that spite is the best motivator in the universe.
That's entirely possible. Very true. I miss this time. I miss this time, though, this time period where the imagination really was going wild in America.
Yeah.
You know, they were like, people were the only reason this worked is because people were right there thinking giants might be real.
Yep.
And all they needed was just a rock monster to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Our imagination is going wild, but it's getting people outside of cell phone tower. It's getting people outside of cell phone tower shot because they think the 5G bullshit's giving us all the super flu.
Yeah.
So that's where the imagination is going, where I'd much rather it go back into building giant fake giants.
I agree.
Let's stage some Mothman sightings. Let's stage some giant pterosaur sightings. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yep.
These are the type of things that gets the creative juices of our country going and, inspires people to look to the sky.
You know what I'm going to say right now? Put chicken feathers on a pig, you got a chicken pig. Now, if you tell me behind this curtain is a chicken pig, $5, chicken pig, you have $15 coming, my friend, because I'm going three fucking times.
What a sweet and simple world we'd be in if Kissel was our creator god.
Yep,
it would
chicken
just be
pig.
Women would have beer in their breasts and in their uteruses.
men would have beer in their cocks.
I don't know. I don't know if I would want a baby marinating in beer while in the womb. It might not create the greatest.
Nick Nolte's doing great.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, there it is. The giant, the Cardiff giant, a good extension from our giant humanoid series. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Parks,
of course,
for bringing that story to all of our attention. And it gives us all hope. If you're a small business person out there and you have no idea what you want to do, make something up. People will pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. That's what we did.
That's what
that's what just happens. But so guys, go out there. And speaking of that, check out lastpodcastlive.com. Check out our live show. It's a fun romp. I miss performing live. Can't fucking wait to do it again.
Oh, yeah.
You guys have been sending all these pictures of Kiss, all of us performing on stage. It's been so nice to see them again. I miss it so bad. But check out lastpodcastlive.com. Check out lastpodcastmerch.com. We got all new merch. We're fielding your requests. If you got any ideas for more merch, we're trying to get more grinders in there. Heard that already.
Yep.
Check it out. 6.66% of all proceeds goes to One Fair Wage. We're just giving our first low. I think we just gave them $15K. I think we're going to be, we're still doing it. So
absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely. Keep on supporting all the shows here, too. We got No Dogs in Space for all your music inquiries.
Yep. Misfits coming next week.
Very cool. Abling It's Top Hat Politics, Page 7 Entertainment, Kind of Fun Wrestling, Nerdy Stuff, Whizbrew. We're filling out the whole Trivial Pursuit pie here, and hopefully we have some kind of football show coming up in the very near future.
Let's hope so.
If you're a former football player and you're listening to this right now, I know we have a huge former football player contingency, mostly because of the CTE. They think we're very funny.
Yes.
Hey, hit me up. Hit me up. I'm looking for a host. Looking for a co-host.
Yeah. If we got any XFL players out there.
Oh, I love XFL.
I love XFL. It was so much fun to watch it for that brief period.
Speaking of Flim Flam Men, Vince McMahon is the P.T. Barnum of our time.
Yeah.
He really is.
I would put him in there.
Yes.
But he really delivers a product, though.
Yes, he does. They have giants as well. And they're real live giants. I mean, they can barely move and they die young. But they are giants.
Yeah. P.T. Barnum, he produced products. What? Mirth.
Mirth?
Mirth. Isn't mirth that and merriment.
Is mirth.
Is anything more valuable than a smile?
Yeah.
Money. Just everything.
You're right.
Gold, silver.
You're
I would
correct.
Say even breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
Anything that gives you anything else.
I've been proved wrong. I've been proved wrong soundly.
All right, everyone.
And also, don't forget to, if you haven't got the last book on the left.
Yes.
Yeah, you can go to IndieBound and order it. And a lot of local bookstores are doing a curbside pickup right now, so be sure to support your local bookstores. And thank you, everyone, so much for the support. We've done a full fucking month now on the New York Times bestseller list. So thank you guys so much for supporting us throughout. It's overwhelming. It means a lot for you guys to support us like this.
They do not want us there. And it's just really awesome to be there. Glenn, we beat Glenn Beck. He stopped buying his own books.
Yep.
So we have beat him.
He fell off after 3 weeks of bulk buying. a whole fucking tree is now sitting in Glenn Beck's fucking garage.
You can also buy his jeans for $200.
God,
so you can
there's
have a mom
nothing
just
I want to
like
be.
Him.
There's nothing I want to be is closer than to Glenn Beck's ass.
All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope everyone is doing all right out there. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Again.
Let's do a Magustalations.
Yeah, okay. You can do one of those.
Yeah, you can do it.
Magustalations, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. What? I mean, yeah, sure.
We have no reason to not.
What if we just go bury me?
I know. I mean, we might as well while we can, right?
We should go bury me, tell people there's a buried giant, but I'll have a little breathing hole like Moses did with the reed.
Ooh.
And then I'll kill them.
This is, fuck yeah, dude. This just sounds like your sexual fantasies, but I'll be a part of it.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.